From the Orion Policy Institute, this is Orion Talks. Our podcast brings together experts for a conversation about events shaping the world at the local, national, and global levels. Tune in as we discuss foreign policy, security, human rights, political and economic development, and various other issues.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Orion Talks. I'm your host, Marta Furlan. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Angela Robinson. Dr. Robinson is a postdoctoral researcher at University of California, Irvine, UCI. She holds a PhD in social psychology from UCI and a master's in cross-cultural psychology from Victoria University of Wellington. Through academic research and work in nonprofit management, Dr. Robinson has dedicated her career to using sound theory and evaluation to maximize the impact of community-based work. Currently, Dr. Robinson's main lines of research focus on the fight against human trafficking, with an emphasis on participatory, strengths-based methodologies that center survivors' perspectives and expertise. Her previous research has focused on issues ranging from the prevention of domestic violence to the impact that more equitable political representation has on women and ethnic minorities. Today, with Dr. Robinson, we are going to talk about human trafficking, one of the most widespread and yet least talked about human rights violations. Dr. Robinson, welcome to Orion Talks.
Thank you for having me.
So as we are about to discuss human trafficking and the effectiveness and limitations of existing approaches, it would be great if you could help us to understand better this phenomenon. I believe that everyone is familiar with the term human trafficking, but it would be helpful if, with your expertise, you could give us an accurate definition, unpack some of the complexity surrounding this concept, and present the different forms through which human trafficking manifests.
Yes. So human trafficking is the crime of using force, fraud, or coercion to compel someone into labor, services, or commercial sex acts against their will. So put another way, it's the criminal removal of someone's freedom for another person's profit. And to bring the scope of human trafficking into focus, a recent report from the International Labor Organization suggested that forced labor generates around $236 billion each year. Global data from the ILO, the International Organization for Migration, and Walk Free suggests that there are currently 49.8 million victims of human trafficking worldwide. And as you mentioned, it takes different forms. So that number includes 22 million people who are in forced marriages, which is considered a form of involuntary servitude, and 27.6 million individuals who have been forced, frauded, or coerced into a wide range of industries. So some of the most widely cited examples of industries where human trafficking might be more prevalent include sectors like agriculture, construction, mining, hospitality, manufacturing, domestic work, and the sex industry.
Thank you, Dr. Robinson. And some of the numbers that you shared certainly say a lot, but can you share a bit more perhaps on why do you believe that it is important to be talking about human trafficking today?
Yeah, so first, I think we have a clear moral imperative to fight human trafficking. So it's universally illegal and it's a clear heinous violation of human rights. And talking about human trafficking can bring visibility to what's often a hidden crime. So it helps people understand more about what it is, learn about how they can identify it or report it if they see it in their communities, and it motivates people to care about the millions of people who are currently victims. And also from a legal standpoint, it's the second largest criminal industry globally, larger in scope than any other crime except drug trafficking. And it's the world's fastest growing criminal industry. So we really need to understand more about how to fight that growth. And in addition to the moral reasons for talking about and addressing human trafficking, there's also a significant economic cost to society. So those costs include victims' use of law enforcement services, the healthcare that people require after exploitation, and specialized victim support services, as well as the reduced economic productivity that victims experience, and a 2022 study by Walby and colleagues estimated that the societal cost of supporting a victim of human trafficking is in the range of $250,000 to $400,000, depending on factors like the type of exploitation that the person experienced. And the profits from human trafficking, that $236 billion annually, accrue only to criminals. So from a societal standpoint and a policy standpoint, it's not economically sustainable to allow trafficking to continue to occur on this scale. And then lastly, I want to highlight that it's important for us to talk about human trafficking because we can do something about it. So drawing awareness to the issue can help us mobilize the resources needed to invest in programs and policies that can support survivors, help us better prosecute traffickers, and prevent human trafficking from happening in the first place.
Thank you so much, Dr. Robinson. And your research has utilized the participatory methods to identify strategies for improving the services that are available to survivors of human trafficking. What is the importance of incorporating survivor input into case management and prevention work?
So I see significant opportunities to involve people with lived experience of human trafficking in leaders of the anti-trafficking movement. And I think their voices and input are really critical to improving the effectiveness of anti-trafficking efforts. And it's really important because data from the U.S. State Department Trafficking in Persons report shows that fewer than 1% of survivors are identified by governments or service providers. And that means that less than 1% of victims ever receive support or assistance to recover from exploitation and establish freedom. So far too many people who escape exploitation are later re-victimized because the underlying needs that led them to become victims in the first place have not been met. And unfortunately, we see that that re-victimization can also happen even when the person does receive support from a government or a nonprofit service provider. And one of the major reasons for that is that although the anti-trafficking sector has been very well-intentioned in support of survivors, the survivors' voices have far too often been excluded when it comes to determining what standards of care should look like, how we should measure the effects of policies and interventions, and what services are most needed and most effective. So for the past several years, I've been conducting research utilizing participatory methods that aims to center survivors and their input in efforts to fight human trafficking. So a lot of that work has been done in partnership with the anti-trafficking nonprofit Everfree, and I've been analyzing data from their Freedom Life Map, which is a participatory case management tool that's being used with survivors in 7 different countries on 4 continents. And that tool guides survivors in self-assessing their existing strengths, as well as their greatest needs and priorities. And survivors use the tool with a trained case manager who can help to link them to resources and programs that guide them in identifying programs that can meet their needs and goals. So the methodology sounds really simple, and it is, but it's largely a new way of doing case management with survivors of human trafficking. So instead of the case manager making a plan for the participant, the case manager puts the survivor in control of identifying what their goals are and walks alongside them by providing linkages to the resources that support what the survivor really wants and needs for themselves. And that approach has psychological benefits in terms of putting the survivor in control, restoring the autonomy and dignity that was taken away when they were trafficked and experiencing exploitation, and really empowers them to take control of their own pathway forward. And from a resource perspective, it also helps the anti-trafficking sector to address real gaps in the resources needed to support more people. So we know that less than 1% of victims are receiving care. And so helping survivors identify their own strengths and needs and allowing us to target resources towards those needs that are most critical and most needed helps us make service provision more efficient and effective and stretch resources to provide care to more survivors. And then when we apply that knowledge to prevention efforts, we're already seeing some really stark global patterns in the data that's coming back from participants across these seven countries. And over time, we think that identifying these patterns can help us find effective pathways for preventing trafficking as well by targeting prevention services, again, at those vulnerabilities that are most identified by survivors as key vulnerabilities to trafficking and exploitation.
Thank you, Dr. Robinson. That sounds like a very fascinating and original approach. And since you mentioned collecting data across countries, I'm interested in knowing what are your data showing and in what ways do they align or not align with common practices observed in the anti-trafficking sector?
Well, I'll highlight a couple of examples from our early findings. So one of the findings that has really interested me is data that have shown some inconsistencies with common myths about the harm of sex trafficking versus labor trafficking. So some of this work has been done in collaboration with my colleagues, Maureen Purcell and Richard Matthew. And we've got some pilot survey data from the United States showing that people on average believe that sex trafficking is more harmful than labor trafficking. But what we see when we look at Freedom Life Map data from survivors of sex trafficking, labor trafficking, and both forms of exploitation, we find that both of those forms of trafficking are equally harmful for victims who are coming out of trafficking situations. So when we look at the services that are available, likely due in part to those beliefs about the relative harm of sex versus labor trafficking, there are more dedicated resources allocated to fighting sex trafficking, even though there are nearly three times as many people affected by labor trafficking. So the data really highlight the need for resources dedicated to understanding and addressing the needs of people who have experienced labor trafficking. And then a second early finding that I want to highlight is an interesting pattern in the greatest strengths and needs of survivors across different geographic and cultural contexts. So from survivors in the seven countries across four different continents, we're seeing that survivors in all locations are reporting the most strengths in the area of rights and safety. So that means that many people understand what their rights are and feel equipped to exercise them. And it shows that the anti-trafficking sector is meeting survivors' needs in these areas. But then when we look at the patterns and vulnerabilities, we see stark patterns there as well. So across, I think, six of the seven countries, the top vulnerabilities are in the area of education, employment, and especially finances. So looking at the specific needs that participants are prioritizing, in four of the seven countries, the top need and priority identified by survivors is in the area of establishing savings. So even among people who are a couple of years out of exploitation, the majority of participants are reporting that they have no savings at all. And that puts people in a really precarious situation where one destabilizing event could force someone back into exploitation in order to survive. So that in itself has not been surprising to service providers. They know that finances and savings are a major challenge for participants. But we do see some gaps in terms of how survivors versus case managers and program leaders think that those needs should be addressed and prioritized. So we're currently running a research study that would validate some of the anecdotal evidence we see on a larger scale. But what we're seeing is that survivors say that establishing savings is a priority right now and needs to be prioritized at this present moment, while anecdotally, case managers are saying that this needs to come later after the participant has addressed some of their other needs. And many organizations are telling us that they don't have any structured programming around savings in particular. There are some strong programs out there, but many organizations are not necessarily running any structured programming around this. So we see some really good opportunities to bring survivors' priorities and these intervention strategies into better alignment. So that could involve scaling existing programs within the anti-trafficking sector that specifically do target savings, or partnering with organizations focused on issues like poverty alleviation that have significant expertise in this area.
Thank you. That's so interesting to hear. And I'm now curious to hear what are then some of the early policy implications that are based on what you're learning from this participatory work with survivors.
Yeah, so using the need for savings as an example, we see implications in a few different policy areas, including funding priorities, legal priorities, and economic policy. So, for example, governmental grant makers might wish to incorporate participatory methods and survivors' priorities into standards of care. So this would reward organizations that offer programs that meet survivors' needs and incorporate survivors' perspectives in more than cursory ways and really center their priorities in the program process. From a legal standpoint, survivors' emphasis on savings has some potential implications for prosecution. So, for example, to better meet survivors' needs, we can place an emphasis on not only criminal accountability, but also civil settlements that bring financial compensation for victims. So, in addition to criminal convictions, there could be a lot of benefit for victims in pursuing financial restitution that can help them establish some financial security and avoid that precarity that puts them at risk for re-exploitation. And then lastly, in terms of economic policy, government-provided compensation for victims of crime is another key approach that can help survivors of trafficking meet those goals for establishing savings. For nonprofit organizations, it's really hard to raise philanthropic dollars to support establishing savings accounts for people. And so that highlights the potential value of victim compensation paired with strong financial literacy programming that can help victims meet those needs.
Thank you, Dr. Robinson. And as we are now moving towards the end of our podcast episode, I'm wondering if beyond your specific research, you can share some of your conclusive thoughts on actions that could be taken to advance our collective fight against human trafficking that, as you were mentioning at the beginning, when there's staggering numbers, seems like we're still lagging behind.
Yeah, so a couple of things that I want to highlight. So one is that human trafficking is an important issue on its own, but it also intersects with a number of other important policy issues and priorities. So things like climate change, conflict, and the vulnerabilities brought on by the pandemic, including isolation and economic uncertainty, have all brought substantial increases in the number of people who might be vulnerable to victimization. So it's important for policy to consider those intersections in issue areas to fight human trafficking. And then to circle back and end on a more hopeful note, I want to remind everyone that we can do something about trafficking. There have been policy wins that have increased the ability to prosecute traffickers in some jurisdictions and that have ensured better support for victims of trafficking that have prevented re-exploitation. So with the right data and the right participatory approaches, we can effectively partner to end human trafficking and exploitation.
Thank you so much, Dr. Robinson, for joining us today, for sharing your expertise with us, for helping us to understand better some of the complexities that's around the phenomenon of human trafficking, but also for encouraging us to reflect positively on what can be done to counter this crime. It was very interesting and informative conversation. And I would also like to thank our listeners for following another episode of Ryan Talks. We're looking forward to having you on the next one.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.